Now, as gunshots echo across the windswept, snow-covered reaches of the wild Northwest, Quaker popped wheat and Quaker popped rice, the breakfast cereal shot from guns, present Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. It's Yukon King, swiftest and strongest lead dog of the Northwest, blazing the trail for Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police in his relentless pursuit of lawbreakers.
On King! On, you Huskies!
Gold! Gold discovered in the Yukon. A stampede to the Klondike in the wild race for riches. Back to the days of the gold rush. With Quaker Pop Wheat and Quaker Pop Rice bringing you the adventures of Sergeant Preston and his wonder dog, Yukon King, as they meet the challenge of the Yukon.
There's no one that can make a better cereal than Quaker Popped Wheat. It's neat. And when you hear that shooting, you're darn tootin'. The Quaker makes the ones shot from guns.
Yes, those king-size premium grains of both Quaker Popped Wheat and Quaker Popped Rice are puffed to perfection for a delicious breakfast treat. Try them tomorrow, sure. Sergeant Preston and Ted Sheridan, on the trail of a band of outlaws, took the shortcut through the forest as they headed for Alexander Bay. It grew colder. The sky clouded over and snow began to fall. The wind was rising, and it seemed that the first snowfall of the year might turn into a blizzard. Toward nightfall, the sergeant and Ted reached Jacques LeBeau's trading post.
I know Jacques, Ted, and we may be able to borrow a dog team and a sled from him.
How far are we from Alexander Bay?
Oh, about 5 miles.
Jacques may be able to tell us something about Dad.
We'll see.
Sergeant Preston and King.
Hello, Jacques.
Welcome, welcome. It has been a long time since you have paid me a visit. What brings you to this neck of the wood, eh?
We're on our way to Alexander Bay.
Oh, I knew it.
Knew what?
That the men who have taken over the old lumber camp there are crook.
Have you seen them?
Two of them. The Indian have told me of the others. The two who come here to buy tobacco speak Russian when they talk between themselves.
You're right, Jacques. It's those men who have brought us here. I'll tell you the whole story, and then you can give us any information you have. This is Ted Sheridan.
Great pleasure. Glad to meet you, Jacques.
Ted's father is a professor. About 2 months ago, Professor Sheridan and two of his colleagues from the university entered the Indian Territory. They planned to make a study of the totem poles, and they also planned to investigate the legend of a buried treasure.
Oh, I have heard some such thing. It's over 100 years ago. The Indian buried their gold so that the pirate who raid the coast will not find it.
And the legend continues that a great council of the Indians was held, and it was decided that one of the famous Indian totem poles should be erected to mark the treasure and guard it.
Oh, but it is only a story.
Evidently not.
Huh?
When Professor Sheridan reached the Tongass village down the coast, he found a stone tablet with a lot of picture writing on it.
The old picture writing. The Indian cannot read it now.
The professor was able to decipher some of it.
So?
And it seemed to be directions for finding the treasure.
Ah, a wonderful thing.
Not wonderful for the professor and his friends. They were being followed by the Russians, who are now at Alexander Bay. The Russians took them prisoner, evidently planning to hold them until Professor Sheridan was able to decipher the writing on the stone tablet completely.
And then the Russian would go and get the gold themselves.
Yes. However, John Haywood, one of Professor Sheridan's friends, escaped. He was found drifting in an open boat in Queen Charlotte Strait and taken to Vancouver.
It is this Haywood who tell you what happened to the professor?
No, he'd lost his memory. Couldn't tell us anything.
Then how you find out, Sergeant?
Ted knew the route his father planned to take through the Indian Territory. We started out from Vancouver to follow it. We've been going from one village to another, and little by little, we've gathered evidence as to what happened to Professor Sheridan and Professor Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
We're sure they're being held prisoner at Alexander Bay. Now, perhaps you can tell us more of what's been going on there.
Well, there are 7 men who live in the old bunkhouse at Alexander Bay.
Oh?
There are two older men who live in a small cabin beside it.
Dad and Professor Fraser.
The Indian do not see much of those two. The window of the cabin are all boarded up. Only once in a while the two old men take a walk down to the water or into the forest.
Under guard, no doubt.
Perhaps. The Indian also speak of a dog with red hair who is chained outside the small cabin.
Well, that's Mike. Dad's Irish setter.
How recently have the Indians reported seeing the men at Alexander Bay?
Yesterday.
And we're not too late, Sergeant.
Let's hope not. Jock, will you lend us a sled and some dogs?
You wish to go to Alexander Bay tonight?
Yes.
But I have told you there are seven of the crook, all of them big and tough, and all carry gun. You are a fine shot, Sergeant. This boy maybe also, but two against seven, you will not have a chance.
Our first job is to get to Alexander Bay as quickly as we can. Will you lend us a team?
Of course, Sergeant. You may take your pick. Come, I'll show you.
King was not harnessed, but romped ahead of the borrowed team as the sergeant drove through the woods toward Alexander Bay. Suddenly, he cut away from the trail and into the forest.
Well, King, hurry your husky. What else?
What's the matter with King?
Listen to him. He's found something. Come on.
Right.
Less than 100 feet from the trail, they found King nosing at a white mound. And as they drew closer, they saw it was a dog covered with snow.
Sergeant, that's Mike, our setter.
All right, King, we'll have a look at him, boy.
Boy, he's been shot.
Yes, but he's still alive. We'll take him back to the sled and bandage his shoulder. We may be able to save him.
Easy, boy.
When the setter had been made comfortable on the sled and his wound had been bandaged, he raised his head to Ted and tried to wag his tail.
Oh, good boy, Mike.
He'll live.
Now those dirty crooks have something else to answer for. But I'm afraid that...
That they may have used a bullet on your father, too?
Yes, Sergeant.
The lumber camp's less than a mile from here. Get on the sled.
Right.
All right, on King! On, you husky!
5 minutes later, the sergeant stopped the team, still in the cover of the woods.
Well, King, hurry, your husky. Hold on. Quiet them down, King.
The sergeant, Ted, and King continued on to the edge of the clearing. The bunkhouse, the cabin beside it, and all the other buildings were dark. One by one, the sergeant and Ted entered them, looking for any sign of life or death. There was none. The camp was deserted. The two men walked down to the shores of the bay.
Could they have left by sea?
Possibly. There's someone who can tell us.
Who?
Mike.
But he's too weak to walk.
He'll not have to do that. Come on.
The sled was driven into the clearing. Then Ted took Mike's head in his hands.
Where's Dad, Mike? Which way did he go, boy? Where's Dad?
Feebly, Mike rose, stepped off the sled, and took a few weak steps toward a trail that led into the forest to the west. Then he collapsed.
Easy, boy.
The sergeant picked him up and placed him back on the sled.
That's enough, fellow. You've answered our question.
What's in that direction, Sergeant?
There are mountains beyond the forest, and at the foot of the mountains, the largest Indian town in the province. It's called Ravensville. There's a school there. Indian children come from all over to attend it.
Could Dad have finished deciphering the message on the stone and told Rostov where to find the gold?
Perhaps. We'll try to catch up with him before he does. All set?
All set, Sergeant.
All right, on King! On, you husky!
All night long, they followed the well-marked trail through the forest. It had stopped snowing, and at dawn, they made a halt to eat and rest the team. At noon, they found the remains of a campfire where Rostov and his men had spent the night. There were clear footprints in the fresh snow leading on toward the west, and the sergeant and Ted pushed on. At dusk, they reached a trading post. The sergeant stopped the sled in front of it.
Okay, hurry, your huskies, put out a hole.
Mike made frantic efforts to get off the sled.
Easy, boy, easy. I can hardly hold him, Sergeant.
Your father may be inside, but there are tracks leading on toward Ravensville.
Who runs this post?
It used to belong to a man named McTavish. However, I heard he sold out this summer. I don't know the new owner. You stay here, Ted. Come on, King.
Easy, Mike, easy.
The store was empty.
Hello!
The door at the rear of the store opened, and a hard-featured, heavy-set man entered.
I'm Sergeant Preston, Northwest Mounted Police. Are you the proprietor?
Yes. Nat Gage. What can I do for you?
Any travelers stopped here recently?
I haven't seen anyone for days except a few Indians.
From Ravensville? That's only a few miles from here, isn't it?
That's right. But the Indians were trappers. The Ravensville Indians have their own store.
Does that door in the rear there lead to your living quarters?
Yeah.
Mind if I take a look?
Of course I mind. You may be a policeman, but you have no right to search a man's house without a warrant.
Did I say anything about searching the place?
You can't pass that door without a warrant.
Well, you should know, Gage, that a police officer in this territory is authorized to act as a magistrate.
Huh?
This is a warrant. I'll fill it out, sign it, and the formalities have been accomplished. Now open that door, Gage.
Open it yourself, Sergeant.
As you wish.
In one swift glance, the sergeant took in the furnishings of the room. A stove, a cot, a table filled with dirty dishes, many of which had been used recently. At one side of the room, a stepladder. The sergeant looked up. There was a trapdoor in the ceiling. Evidently, there was a loft above the room. The sergeant started for the stepladder when King's barking stopped him. He turned. Gage was standing in the doorway, leveling a shotgun.
That's far enough, Sergeant.
We'll continue our adventure in just a moment. Say, it's a race to the breakfast table when there's swell-tasting Quaker Popped wheat or Quaker Popped rice waiting for you. A real prize in good eating. And listen, you'd better have paper and pencil handy for a terrific offer Wheat and Rice Shot from Guns have for you at the end of the program. It's straight out of the Great Northwest. Keep listening. Now to continue. Just as Gage was squeezing the trigger of the shotgun, King hit him and knocked him against the door jamb. Gage cracked his head against it and went down. In the next instant, the sergeant had moved in and pulled the shotgun from the trader's grasp.
All right, King, that's enough, boy. Get up, Gage. That was a clumsy attempt at murder.
The sergeant snapped a pair of handcuffs on the trader as Ted burst into the store.
Sergeant, are you all right?
Everything's under control.
I heard a shot.
This man's name is Gage. He objected to my searching his living quarters. There's a loft over this room. I'm going to investigate it.
Just then, both men turned to see the Irish setter dragging himself into the store.
Mike, I told you to stay on the sled, boy.
Bring him here, Ted. It wouldn't surprise me if the professor's up in the loft. You have a gun. Keep an eye on Gage while I take a look.
Right.
Both Professor Sheridan and Professor Frazier were found in the loft, bound and gagged. When they had been freed and helped down the ladder, there was a joyful reunion between Sheridan and his son. And then the two older men related everything that had happened to them since they entered the Indian territory. Much of it the sergeant and Ted already knew. But at last, the professor reached the events of the last 2 days.
Yesterday morning, Fraser and I finished deciphering the message on the stone tablet. We'd given up hope of rescue from outside, so we passed on the information to Rostov. He promised that we'd be set free as soon as we told him where the gold was. Of course, he didn't keep his promise. He insisted we must come with him.
And he shot Mike before you left the lumber camp, huh?
He shot at him. Mike ran into the forest. I was hoping he hadn't been hit.
He was hit, Dad. We found him in time to save his life.
And he led us to you, Professor.
Good boy.
What was this message you found on the stone?
That the gold was protected by a sun and raven totem pole in what used to be a sort of capital city for the Indians.
The town that's called Ravensville, only a few miles from here.
That's the place. We stopped here late this afternoon. That man over there wearing the handcuffs is a friend of Rostov's. He agreed to keep us here until Rostov and his men went into Ravensville and got the gold.
The Indians there are well armed. They'll not find it an easy task. And as I remember the village, the only sun and raven totem is in the exact center of the town.
Perhaps the chief will give them permission to dig around it.
How long ago did Rostov and his men leave here?
Oh, I should say about 3 hours ago.
Ted, you stay here with your father and Professor Fraser. Guard our prisoner.
You're going on alone?
Yes, I'll make better time.
But one man against the whole gang.
I'll have help against them. I know the chief, and I can count on his full cooperation. Let's go, King.
Rostov and his men had made camp on a wooded hill just outside of Ravensville. On the edge of town, directly below them, they saw the large two-story building that housed the mission school. It had stopped snowing. The moon shone bright, and down the main street of the town, they could see a giant totem pole rising above the Indians' cabins. Even from this distance, they could make out the carvings.
That's it. There's the sun face at the top. The carvings of the sun children below it.
Then the figures of the Fog Woman and the Raven.
It's the Sun and the Raven totem, all right.
It's the one we're looking for. Must have been a landmark from the time they buried the gold.
100 years ago. Just waiting for us to dig it up.
Yeah. It's not as simple as that.
That's what I've been thinking. The Indians will refuse to let us mess around with their idol.
These Indians are Christians. They don't consider the totem an idol anymore. They think of it as a monument to a hero. The Raven was a man, you see.
Then all we have to do is go to the chief.
And tell him what we're after. Don't be a fool. These Indians know the value of gold. They could use it to help run that big school down there.
Well, the totem's right in the middle of the town.
Yes.
We can't get permission. How are we going to dig for the treasure?
By clearing out the town.
How?
I am not considering a massacre. There are too few of us for any open attack.
Then how?
The Raven brought fire to the Indians.
Fire?
We can do the same thing.
Half an hour later, smoke began to pour from the rear of the mission school. The alarm was sounded in the town at once. Everyone hurried out of the school. The children and their teachers were evacuated, and the Indians fought the fire desperately. But there was a strong wind, and the flames rose higher and higher. It was clear there was no chance of saving the building, and that the work of Father Ledoux's lifetime was doomed to destruction. Suddenly, above the roar of the fire, the crowd heard cries for help. A boy and a girl were framed to one of the upper windows at the front of the building, which hadn't yet begun to burn. Without hesitation, Father Ledoux ran into the building after them.
Looking, hoyo, Huskies, what a...
A few minutes later, Sergeant Preston reached the scene.
Sergeant Preston.
This is a terrible thing, Chief. How did it start?
It started in storeroom. May not know how.
Have you seen anything of some Russians around here? Half a dozen men with heavy black beards?
No, but fire not worse thing, Sergeant. Two children call out from window on second floor.
Oh?
Father Ledoux going after them. Them not come out.
The fire hasn't reached the front of the building yet. The front stairs must be clear.
There's plenty smoke.
We'll see if we can reach them. Come on, King.
Sergeant dashed into the burning building, tying a bandana around his face as he ran. He found the stairs to the second floor and started up them with King at his heels. Just at the top, he saw the black-robed figure of the missioner. The two children were lying beside him. The sergeant picked them up first, one in either arm, and raced down the stairs to the front door. He called to the chief.
Chief, here. Take them.
Relieved of his burden, the sergeant filled his lungs with fresh air and then ran back up the stairs. The return trip of the missioner took more time. And just as he reached the lower floor again, the flames broke out. Wiry fingers clutched at the sergeant and King. But they reached the safety of the open air, and the missioner was carried to safety. There was a bump on his head which indicated he had fallen and been knocked out. The sergeant gave both him and the children first aid. And when they were resting comfortably, he turned to the chief.
The building's gone, Chief.
It'd take many years, much money to build a new school.
Terrible loss for your people, but there's nothing more to be done. I wonder if you and your men will help me find the Russians I spoke to you about.
Them bad men?
They're killers. It's possible they're in your village right now. They're after some gold which may be buried at the foot of the Sun and Raven totem pole.
Me not know about any gold.
It was buried a long time ago. I have an idea Rostov and his men may have started this fire so they could have a chance to dig up the ground around the totem pole.
Indians help you catch them.
You have plenty of men, we'll surround the village, and there'll be no chance of anyone escaping.
That's a good idea. Men, you do what Sergeant say. Help him catch Crook who's not mad.
In the center of the village, Rostov and his fellow outlaws were so intent on their digging that they failed to notice the approach of the sergeant and the Indians until it was too late. They made a fight of it, trying to break through the circle around them. When Rostov was wounded and dropped to the ground, the others gave up. All of them were taken prisoner. Those who were unhurt were tied hand and foot. The sergeant bandaged Rostov's shoulder beside the yawning hole where the outlaws had been digging.
Was it you who started the fire, Rostov?
I have nothing to say.
Well, there are plenty of other charges against you and every member of your gang.
Sergeant!
Ted! Professor Sheridan! I thought you were going to stay at the post.
We tied up Gage in the Fraser to guard him.
So you caught the whole gang?
Yes, and before they'd reached the treasure.
Well, they'd never have found it here, Sergeant.
No?
Not at the base of this totem pole. This one can't be more than 20 or 30 years old.
But it's the only Sun and Raven totem around here. But isn't that right, Chief?
The only one now. Others burn up tonight.
Others? Tonight? What do you mean?
When Father built chapel a long time ago, their four Sun and Raven totems stand on hill. Indians dig them up, use them for corner posts of chapel.
Then the gold may have been buried on the hill. Can you show us where the totems used to stand?
I wonder if there's anything left of the totems.
Them burned.
But perhaps not completely. If there's anything left of them, I should be able to judge their age by the type of carving.
Them plenty old.
Yes. Suppose we go back to the school and take a look at them, Ted.
Oh, sure thing, Dad.
We'll all go. Will you have some of your men guard the prisoners, Chief?
The sergeant, the chief, Ted, and the professor returned to the smoking ruins of what had once been the school. It was deserted now. The children and the missioner had been taken to homes in the village. Chief led the way to the chapel. The walls had fallen in, but the stone altar with a cross rising from it, untouched by the fire, gleamed white in the moonlight. One of the Sun and Raven totems, which had been used as a corner post, lay at the foot of the altar, and the professor stopped to examine the charred carving at the base.
Can you make anything of it, Professor?
Not very much.
The sergeant's eye was caught by a flash of color near the foot of the altar, and he walked on to investigate. Then he crouched down, and a startled expression broke from his lips.
What
is it?
Come here.
Some of the carving which can be made out?
Look, the top of this pole was hollow. The wood's burned away. Look what was hidden inside the pole.
Is it really?
Yes, Ted, it's gold. Pure gold.
So the gold wasn't buried after all.
The writing on the stone tablet didn't say it was. It said the gold was protected by the Sun and Raven totem. It was hidden inside it.
And we might never have found it if Rostov hadn't started this fire.
Him bad man.
Yes, Chief, and he and his men will go to jail for a long, long time. But this gold is yours. And there's enough to build the finest school in Canada.
This gold belonged to Indians?
Of course. I was only trying to find it so it could be used to help your people.
This is the end of a long trail for the professor, and he'd never have been able to follow it. Hadn't been for your totem poles.
That's true. They marked the trail. The Thunderbird totem, the fight with the Land Otters totem, the burial pole totem, the killer whale totem, and now at last, the Sun and Raven totem.
Totems maybe show way, but maybe higher power show you how to read message from totem. Me go tell Father Ledoux. Me tell him you find gold for new school at foot of altar. It God's will.
God's will, Chief. This case is closed.
Sergeant Preston will return in just a moment with a word about our next exciting adventure. I understand, Sergeant Preston, that people travel thousands of miles to see the Sun and Raven pole and other totems.
That's right. Totem poles represent one of the most curious ways that people have recorded their adventures and legends.
I've heard that some totem poles are as much as 60 feet high.
Yes, and the weird carvings of animals, birds, and strange creatures are all done by hand and painted in beautiful, bright colors.
Well, fellas and girls, as you heard today's exciting story, if you thought you'd give anything to see the Sun and Raven totem pole yourself, listen.
Here's the surprise, the big news you've been waiting for.
Now you can get a miniature copy, a real scale model of the Sun and Raven totem pole you heard about in today's story.
It's a special offer that Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice are making to friends of Sergeant Preston.
And Sun and Raven is just one of five different totem poles that you can get.
Yes, a complete collection has been made especially for Sergeant Preston's friends.
You get the Sun and Raven,
the famous Thunderbird,
the fight with the Land Otters,
the weird burial pole,
the great killer whale.
And these 4-inch scale models are authentic copies of the real totem poles that you would see today if you traveled up in the Northwest.
They're pressed wood miniatures, hand-painted in bright reds, blues, greens, and yellows.
Just think of the fun you'll have making your own little Indian teepee villages for each totem pole.
And showing them to your friends at school when you study Indian life.
Now, here's how easy it is to get the Sun and Raven, or the whole collection of five different totem poles.
First, get one of the special new packages of Quaker Puffed Wheat or Quaker Puffed Rice now at grocery.
The box top tells you just what to do for any totem pole you want.
It has a special handy order blank with a list of the five different poles right on it.
You just check the totem poles you want. And for every one you check, send 25 cents.
For the whole collection, you send only $1.
Now, whether you want one or all five totem poles, you only have to send one box top from Quaker Puffed Rice or Quaker Puffed Wheat.
Then send 25 cents for each totem pole you want, or $1 for the whole collection of five different poles.
Send two totem poles, Box L, Chicago 77, Illinois.
And here's something extra you get. With your order, you get a booklet that tells the fascinating history and story of each totem pole.
Honestly, if these aren't the most exciting scale model totem poles you ever saw, you get your money back, every cent.
But don't wait. The limited supply of these totem poles is going like hotcakes.
So hurry, hurry, hurry. Get the special new packages of swell-tasting Quaker Puffed Wheat or Rice.
Read all about these fascinating totem poles right on the package.
Then rush your order right away tonight to Totem Poles, Box L, Chicago 77, Illinois.
And now, here is Sergeant Preston.
Sergeant Preston reporting for duty, Inspector.
Sergeant, a crook and killer, recognized as the notorious Burley Kane, robbed the Dawson State Bank and escaped with several thousand in cash after killing a teller.
Burley Kane is a dangerous man, sir.
Yes, too dangerous to be at large, Sergeant. I want you to trail him, recover the cash, and bring him in for murder.
But Sergeant Preston doesn't know the dangers that lie ahead. He'll face death more than once in his attempt to do his duty. Be sure to hear this next exciting adventure. These radio dramas, a feature of Sergeant Preston of the Yukon Incorporated, are created by George W. Trendle, produced by Trendle Campbell Muir Incorporated, directed by Fred Flowerday, and edited by Fran Stryker. The part of Sergeant Preston is played by Paul Sutton. Sergeant Preston of the Yukon is brought to you every Tuesday and Thursday at this same time by Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice, the breakfast cereals shot from guns.
Hello, children, and you mothers, too. This is your friend Aunt Jemima. Speaking of supper tonight, do you ever have pancakes? Golden, tender, melting, light Aunt Jemima pancakes? Easiest supper you can fix. Know why? Because my Aunt Jemima pancake mix is now fluff whipped. So all you do is add milk and stir. Don't beat. Don't overstir. Leave some little lumps in. And you'll bake the lightest pancakes ever. Try my fluff whipped Aunt Jemima pancake mix and serve folks stacks of Aunt Jemima pancakes, lightest pancakes anyone can bake. There's nothing more tempting in this whole wide world than Aunt Jemima's pancakes light and say, have some for supper tonight. Thank you, folks.
This is J. Michael wishing you goodbye, good luck, and good health from Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice. So long. Listen tomorrow at the same time to The Green Hornet, brought to you by the drink that makes you feel fresh again, delicious Orange Crush. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.